Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The World of Percy Jackson. In this episode, we're going to read chapters 53 to 54, and in the previous episode, we read chapters 51 to 52, in which we witnessed a heroic sacrifice made by Leo. As Festus was blowing up in the air, Leo had told Jason that he has got a plan. Is his plan to sacrifice himself in for the prophecy, or could it be that he actually does have a plan? We were left on a cliffhanger, and it looks like we won't be getting that answer in this episode, because we will now be reading chapters 53 and 54 from Nico's perspective. So, without further ado, let's see how it is looking from down below on the battleground. So, chapter 53, Nico. Nico had witnessed many forms of death. He didn't think anything could surprise him anymore. He was wrong. In the middle of the battle, Will Solis ran up to him and said one word in his ear. Octavian. That got Nico's full attention. He had hesitated when he'd had the chance to kill Octavian, but there was no way Nico would let that scumbag ogre escape justice. Where? Come on, Will said. Hurry! Nico turned to Jason, who was fighting next to him. Jason, I have to go. Then he plunged into the chaos, following Will. They passed Tyson and his Cyclops, who were bellowing, Bad dog! Bad dog! As they passed the heads of the Cynophili. Grover Underwood and a team of satyrs danced around with their panpipes, playing harmonies so dissonant that the earthen shelled ghosts cracked apart. Travis Stoll ran past, arguing with his brother, What do you mean we set the landmines on the wrong hill? Nico and Will were halfway down the hill when the ground trembled under their feet. Like everyone else, monster and demigod alike, they froze in horror and watched as the whirling column of earth erupted from the top of the next hill, and Gaia appeared in all her glory. And then something large and bronze swooped out of the sky. Thump! Festus the bronze dragon snatched up the Earth Mother and soared away with her. What? How? Nico stammered. I don't know, Will said, but I doubt there's much we can do about that. We have other problems. Will sprinted towards the nearest Onager. As they got closer, Nico spotted Octavian, furiously readjusting the machine's targeting levers. The throwing arm was already printed with a full payload of Imperial gold and explosives. The ogre rushed out, tripping over gears and anchor spikes, fumbling with the ropes. Every so often, he glanced up at Festus the dragon. Octavian! Nico yelled. The ogre spun, then backed up against the huge sphere of ammunition. His fine purple robe snagged on the trigger rope, but Octavian didn't notice. Fumes from the payload curled about him as if drawn to the Imperial gold jewelry around his arms and neck, the golden wreath in his hair. Ha ha! Oh, I see! Octavian's laughter was brittle and quite insane. Trying to steal my glory, eh? No, son of Pluto. I am the savior of Rome. I was promised! Will raised his hands in a placating gesture. Octavian. Get away from the Onager. That isn't safe. Of course it's not! I will shoot Gaia down with this machine! Out of the corner of his eye, Nico saw Jason Grace rocket into the sky with Piper in his arms, flying straight towards Festus. Around the son of Jupiter, storm clouds gathered, swirling into a hurricane. Thunder boomed. You see? Octavian cried. The gold on his body was definitely smoking now, attracted to the catapult's payload like iron to a giant magnet. The gods approve of my actions! Jason is making that storm, Nico said. If you fire the Onager, you'll kill him, and Piper, and... Good! Octavian yelled. They're traitors! All traitors! Listen to me, Will tried again. This is not what Apollo would want. Besides, your robes are... You know nothing, Gracchus! Octavian wrapped his hand around the release level. I must act before they get any higher. Only an Onager such as this can make the shot. I will single-handedly... Centurion, said a voice behind him. From the back of the siege engine, Michael Cahale appeared. He had a large red knot on his forehead where Tyson had bonked him unconscious. He stumbled as he walked, but somehow he had found his way here from the shore, and along the way he'd picked up a sword and shield. Michael! Octavian shrieked with glee. Excellent! Guard me while I fire this Onager. Then we will kill these Greek guy together. Michael Cahale took on the scene, his boss's ropes tangled in the trigger rope, Octavian's jewelry fuming from proximity to the Imperial gold ammunition. He glanced up at the dragon, now high in the air, surrounded by rings of storm clouds like the circles of an archery target. Then he scowled at Nico. Nico readied his own sword. Surely Michael Cahale would warn his leader to step away from the Onager. Surely he would attack. "Are you certain, Octavian?" asked the son of Venus.
"Yes!"
"Are you absolutely certain?"
"Yes, you fool! I'll be remembered as the savior of Rome! Now keep them away while I destroy Gaia."
"Octavian, don't," Will pleaded. "We can't allow you, Will," Nico said. "We can't stop him." Sola stared at him in disbelief, but Nico remembered his father's words in the Chapel of Bones. "Some deaths cannot be prevented." Octavian's eyes gleamed.
"That's right, son of Pluto. You are helpless to stop me. It is my destiny. Cahale, stand guard."
"As you wish." Michael moved in front of the machine, interposing himself between Octavian and the two Greek demigods. "Centurion, do what you must." Octavian turned to release the catch.
"A good friend to the last."
Nico almost lost his nerve. If the Onager really did fire true, if it hit scored a hit on Festus the dragon, and Nico allowed his friends to be hurt or killed. But he stayed where he was. For once, he decided to trust the wisdom of his father. Some deaths should not be prevented.
"Goodbye, Gaia!" Octavian yelled. "Goodbye, Jason Grace the traitor!"
Octavian cut the release wire with his ogre's knife, and he disappeared. The catapult arms sprang forward faster than Nico's eyes could follow, launching Octavian along with the ammunition. The ogre's scream faded until he was simply part of the fiery comet soaring skyward.
"Goodbye, Octavian,"
Michael Cahale said. He glared at Will and Nico one last time as if daring them to speak. Then he turned his back and trudged away. Nico could have lived with Octavian's end. He might have even said, "Good riddance." But his heart sank as the comet kept gaining altitude. It disappeared into the storm clouds, and the sky exploded in a dome of fire.
And that's the end of chapter 54. And just like that, we have now seen the end of Octavian.
This seems like one of those endings that you would see in those cartoons shows where they had launched into the air and then they become a twinkle in the sky. It kind of sounds like that at the moment, where Octavian just launched into the sky and is now a part of the sky, never to be seen again. Now, it doesn't seem like we will be done with Octavian just yet. I don't think that he's going to get quite the ending that we think where he's going to get. So I'm curious to see whether he'll come back in the future chapters of this book and see what he does. But until then, we'll be followed by a short break and read chapter 54 soon after. So, see you after the break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back from the break, and now we're going to read chapter 54, Nico. The next day, there weren't many answers. After the explosion, Piper and Jason, free-falling and unconscious, were plucked out of the sky by giant eagles and brought to safety. But Leo did not reappear. The entire Hephaestus cabin scoured the valley, finding bits and pieces of the Argo Second's broken hull, but no sign of Festus the dragon or his master. All the monsters had been destroyed or scattered. Greek and Roman casualties were heavy, but not nearly as bad as they might have been. Overnight, the satyrs and nymphs disappeared into the wolves' woods for a convocation of the Cloven Elders. In the morning, Grover Underwood reappeared to announce that they could not sense the Earth Mother's presence. Nature was more or less back to normal. Apparently, Jason Piper and Leo's plan worked. Gaia had been separated from her source of power, charmed to sleep, and then atomized in the combined explosion of Leo's fire and Octavian's man-made comet. An immortal could never die, but now Gaia would be like her husband, Uranus. The Earth would continue to function as normal, just as the sky did, but Gaia was now so dispersed and powerless that she could never again form a consciousness. At least that was the hope. Octavian would be remembered for saving Rome by hurling himself into the sky in a fiery ball of death, but it was Leo Valdez who had made the real sacrifice. The victory celebration at camp was muted due to grief, not just for Leo, but also for the many others who had died in battle. Shrouded demigods, both Greek and Roman, were burned at the campfire, and Chiron asked Nico to oversee the burial rites. Nico agreed immediately. He was grateful for the opportunity to honor the dead. Even the hundreds of spectators didn't bother him. The hardest part was afterward, when Nico and the six demigods from the Argo II met on the porch of the big house. Jason hung his head, even his glasses lost in shadow. We should have been there at the end. We could have helped Leo.
It's not right,
Piper agreed, wiping away her tears.
All that work, getting the physician's cure, for nothing.
Hazel broke down crying.
Piper, where's the cure? Bring it out!
Bewildered, Piper reached into her belt pouch. She produced a chamoy cloth package. But when she unfolded the cloth, it was empty. All eyes turned to Hazel.
How?
Annabeth asked. Frank put his arm around Hazel. In Delos, Leo pulled the two of us aside. He pleaded with us to help him. Through her tears, Hazel explained how she had switched the physician's cure for an illusion, a trick of the mist, so that Leo could keep the real vial. Frank told him about Leo's plan to destroy a weakened Gaia with one massive fire explosion. After talking with Nike and Apollo, Leo had been certain that such an explosion would kill any mortal within a quarter mile, so he knew he had to get far away from everyone. "You wanted to do it alone," Frank said. "You thought there would be a slim chance that he, a son of Hephaestus, could survive the fire, but if anyone was with him, he said that Hazel and I, being Roman, would understand about sacrifice, but he knew the rest of you would never allow it." At first, the others looked angry, like they wanted to scream and throw things, but as Frank and Hazel talked, their group's rage seemed to dissipate. It was hard to be mad at Frank and Hazel when they were both crying. Also, the plan sounded exactly like the sneaky, twisted, ridiculously annoying, and noble sort of thing Leo Valdez would do. Finally, Piper let out a sound somewhere between a sob and a laugh.
If he were right now here, I would kill him. How was he planning to take the cure? He was alone.
Maybe he found a way, Percy said. This is Leo we're talking about. He might come back any minute. Then we can take turns strangling him. Nico and Hazel exchanged looks. They both knew better, but they said nothing. The next day, the second since the battle, Romans and Greeks worked side by side to clean up the war zone and tend the wounded. Blackjack the Pegasus was recovering nicely from his arrow wound. Guido had decided to adopt Reyna as his human. Reluctantly, Lou Ellen had agreed to turn her new pet piglets back into Romans. Will Solis hadn't spoken with Nico since the encounter at the Onager. The son of Apollo spent most of his time in the infirmary, but whenever Nico saw him running across camp to fetch more medical supplies or make a house call and want some wounded demigod, he felt a strange twinge of melancholy. No doubt Will Solis thought Nico was a monster now for letting Octavian kill himself. The Romans bivouacked next to the strawberry fields, where they insisted on building their standard field camp. The Greeks pitched in to help them raise the dirt walls and dig the trenches. Nico had never seen anything stranger or cooler. Dakota shared Kool-Aid with the kids from the Dionysus cabin. The children of Hermes and Mercury laughed and told stories and brazenly stole things from just about everyone. Reyna, Annabeth, and Piper were inseparable, roaming the camp as a trio to check on the progress of the repairs. Chiron, escorted by Frank and Hazel, inspected the Roman troops and praised them for their bravery. By evening, the general mood had improved somewhat. The dining hall pavilion had never been so crowded. The Romans were welcomed like old friends. Coach Hedge roamed around the demigods, beaming and holding his baby boy and saying, "Hey, you want to meet Chuck? This is my boy, Chuck!" The Aphrodite and Athena girls alike cooed over the feisty little satyr baby, who waved his pudgy fist, kicked his tiny hooves, and bleated, "Bah! Bah!" Clarice, who'd been named the baby's godmother, trailed behind the coach like a bodyguard and occasionally muttered, "All right, all right. Give the kid some space." At announcement time, Chiron stepped forward and raised his goblet.
"Out of every tragedy," he said, "comes new strength. Today, we thank the gods for this victory. To the gods!"
The demigods all joined the toast, but their enthusiasm seemed muted. Nico understood the feeling. "We saved the gods again, and now we're supposed to thank them?" Then Chiron said,
"And to new friends! To new friends!"
Hundreds of demigod voices echoed across the hills. At the campfire, everyone kept looking at the stars as if they expected Leo to come back in some dramatic last-minute surprise. Maybe he'd swoop in, jump off Hephaestus's back, and launch into corny jokes. It didn't happen. After a few songs, Reyna and Frank were called to the front. They got a thunderous round of applause from both the Greeks and Romans. Up on Half-Blood Hill, the Athena Parthenos glowed more brightly in moonlight as if to signal, "These kids are all right." "Tomorrow," Reyna said, "we Romans must return home. We appreciate your hospitality, especially since we almost killed you.
You almost got killed,"
Annabeth corrected. "Whatever, Chase."
"Ooh,"
the crowd said as one, and everybody started laughing and pushing each other. Even Nigo had to smile. "Anyway," Frank took over, "Reyna and I agree this marks a new era of friendship between the camps." Reyna clapped him on the back. "That's right. For hundreds of years, the gods tried to separate us to keep us from fighting. But there's a better kind of peace. Cooperation." Piper stood up from the audience.
"Are you sure your mom is a war goddess?"
"Yes, McLean," Reyna said. "I still intend to fight a lot of battles. But from now on, we fight together."
That got a big cheer. Zhang raised his hand for quiet.
"You'll all be welcome at Camp Jupiter. We've come to an agreement with Chiron, a free exchange between the camps, weekend visits, training programs, and, of course, emergency aid in times of need."
"And parties?" asked Dakota. "Hear, hear,"
said Conrastol. Reyna spread her arms. "That goes without saying. We Romans invented parties." Another big ooh. "So thank you," Reyna concluded. "All of you. We could have chosen hatred and war. Instead, we found acceptance and friendship." Then she did something so unexpected, Nico would later think he dreamed it. She walked up to Nico, who was standing to one side in the shadows, as usual. She grabbed his hand and pulled him gently into the firelight.
"We had one home," she said. "Now we have two."
She gave Nico a big hug, and the crowd roared with approval. For once, Nico didn't feel like pulling away. He buried his face in Reyna's shoulder and blinked the tears out of his eyes.
And that's the end of chapter 54. Wow, what a plot twist. I mean, to think that Leo had given such a marvelous sacrifice for the rest of the camp speaks volumes about his character and who he is. But there's quite a feeling... that we're not over just yet. Because Hazel and Frank had admitted when Leo had gone up to them and asked for the vial of the physician's cure. So that means that he had a plan that he wasn't gonna exit that quickly. So I have a feeling that he might be alive. Just, he might be planning his dramatic entrance right now. And that concludes
our reading for today's chapter, we will now be moving on to the Q&A session. Once again, a couple of rules when it comes to the Q&A session. Number one, if I skip your question, do please let me know, and I will try my best to make it in the next episode. Following up to that rule, if I feel that I don't wish to answer the question at the moment, if I feel uncomfortable answering the question at the moment, I probably will not answer it. That isn't to say that I don't wish to discourage anybody from asking questions. Please go ahead. Please use all the curiosity and just keep asking. And I hope that everyone's curiosity continues to grow, even if I choose not to answer some of these questions. Because I appreciate that every one of you are willing to come forward and ask these questions. Because that just shows that the curiosity is glowing and sparking. Additionally, I do tend to also not answer questions that have been previously answered or similar questions that have been previously answered. So I recommend that you do check out previous episodes where I might have answered those questions so that you can see what my answer to those were. Without further ado, let's move on to the Q&A session. So our first question is, how do you feel about Leo's sacrifice? It definitely was unexpected, to say the least. I think that the fact that Leo had such... It would have been expected either way. The way if Jason had died or if Leo had died, it would have been unexpected. Even if we were to predict it this entire time, there's a stage of denial that you reach. And then when you actually see the moment happening, it guts your heart, in all honesty. And I think that Leo definitely made a very, very heroic sacrifice. I almost want to convince myself that he is still alive because of the plan that he had made with Frank and Hazel. So I just feel there's a strong feeling inside of myself that it is not over yet. And that Leo is going to come back stronger and even better. Next question, favorite book genre? I would probably say either mythology, or so maybe the fantasy section or the realistic section, actually. Polar opposites, but I think I do enjoy a little bit of both, depending on the mood. Next question is, any predictions for the next series? Most likely it's going to, I believe, if I remember, it's the Trials of Apollo. These will probably focus more on a different god. I think that these two series, the Heroes of Olympus and Percy Jackson and the Olympians, have largely focused on the big three. So I think that the focus is now going to shift towards some of the other gods who are still just as important but aren't more widely talked about or as popular than compared to the big three. And that was the main centering point when it came to these books, these two series. They all revolved around the big three. So I think that the Trials of Apollo will definitely revolve around Apollo, of course. But I think it will also show a little bit more of the different gods and goddesses and their lives, such as Artemis or Demeter, and so on and so forth. So I think I'm very excited to see that. Next question is, do you prefer Romans or Greeks? I think that they each have their unique qualities that make them the strong fortitude that they are. Now, when it comes to camps, I probably would prefer Camp Half-Blood than over Camp Jupiter, simply because the culture that seems to promote it, that seems to be a centering point at Camp Jupiter, is a lot more of physical combat. And I think that for me, I also enjoy being able to hone in on the other skills as well and be able to create a balance, which I think Camp Half-Blood focuses on more. That isn't to say that Camp Jupiter doesn't do that, but I think that with their Capture the Flag especially, I think you can see just the level of skills that are required when it comes to fighting against Romans versus fighting against Greeks. Next question. How do you think Sally Jackson is feeling about not having to see her son since he disappeared and put his life in danger? Do you think she's in the loop and knows what's going on? That's actually a very fascinating question.
I would assume no, because she's a mother. If she were to find out what kind of danger Percy is putting himself in, I mean, imagine finding out that your son is in the depths and pits of Tartarus, and his skin is burning away every single second. I don't think any mother would enjoy hearing that. So definitely, I think that the mist is definitely playing a huge role in clouding her memory, or just clouding her thoughts of Percy so that it doesn't worry her as much as it does. And I think that ignorance is bliss, if I'm going to be honest. This is one of those key moments where ignorance is true bliss. And I think that for Sally, we need to continue on that track, most likely. Next question. Are you a cat person or a dog person? I actually have a fear of both. So we'll have to see. But I think that they're both very fascinating pets and fun, loving to have as well. Next question is, have you ever drawn anything or anyone from the books? I actually don't think I have, but definitely will put that as a future project. And next question is, what are your thoughts on Solangelo? I believe that's Will Solis and Nico. I think that Nico definitely is going to find his solace. I think he's definitely going to find that sort of peace and that sort of belongingness that he's always felt like he's missed out on. I think that Reyna is definitely going to give him that foot through the door and help him feel like he does belong in the community of demigods. But I think that his time with Will, as he continues to spend more time with Will, I think he definitely will have that feeling of having a sense of belonging. Because I think that the loss of Bianca really did something to him. I mean, I think that Bianca was the only reason why he had that cheerful personality that Percy first saw. I mean, his enthusiasm about mythomagic is gone now. Well, granted, he's also older, but you can see just the enthusiasm just fizzled out the moment Bianca was killed. And it takes a lot for that burden, to carry that burden. And it's more of just sorrow eating away at you every single day. And I think that with Will, I think that he's definitely going to need that sort of light that Bianca had, and that Bianca also took away with her when she was killed. And I think that Will is going to be able to bring that back to Nico, be that light, that source of light for Nico that he's been desperately trying to find for the past couple of years. So I think that it's going to be a really, really amazing balance. And I think that they will definitely give the peace that they need for each other. And that concludes our Q&A session. I hope you guys enjoyed that just as much as I did. Shoutouts will be in the description of this podcast. And without further ado, that concludes our Q&A, our entire episode. And next week, we will continue to see, is Leo really dead? Or is there more to this prophecy than what we thought? So, until next week, stay safe and stay out of boredom.